Welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show on the Voice of Vashon, located here on beautiful Vashon Island, Washington. We always begin our broadcast with an introduction by our founder, Mr. Brian Brown.
Ahoy, Vashon. How's the French say, Vashon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vashon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vashon.
As a way of introduction to Brian and to our podcast, I want to play a clip here of a speech that Brian gave several years ago at a fundraiser. So here is Brian.
Our speaker today is Mr. Brian Brown. The title of it is The Times of My Life, Media Days in Manhattan. Brian is currently a resident of Vashon. He's a former newspaper reporter, a wire service correspondent, television documentarian and commentator, magazine writer and editor, as well as a political speech writer, comedy collaborator, media strategist, and a publicist for Time Magazine, and one heck of a nice guy. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Brian Brown.
Thank you, Truman. I thought it was imperative to give this talk today. Well, I can still remember what I did. This also explains why I was listening to Truman's introduction so intensely. I'm saying, who is this guy? He's talking about what? And he did for 30 years? Amazing. I was in Time in the glory years. We called it Paradise Publishing, and it was. Perhaps the last great decades of print journalism, or more to the point, the last decades for a mass market news magazine. When I left Time, circulation was at 3.5 million. We never went over that, and I suspect circulation today is about half what it was. When I think about the future, if there is one for news magazines, it's going to be more focused demographics. In my day, magazines had a hard time competing with television for an audience and advertising dollars. Now both magazines and television are competing with the internet. It's a whole new ballgame. I recall going to a Time Life alumni meeting. We actually have an association at the Time of Life building in New York last fall. There's a piece of sculpture of a paperclip in front of the building. How quaint, I thought, when I walked by. I had this vision of myself walking down the gangplank of the last whaling ship to put into Nantucket with only a hull, carrying maybe a quarter of amount of oil because they'd run out of whales to kill. Upstairs at the Time Life meeting, it was like going back to a 40th anniversary at your high school reunion. It was great seeing old friends and colleagues. There was lots of toast. When it was my turn, I got up and I sang a song that went like this. They were the days, my friend, I thought they'd never end. They did. We had a great run. It was a fascinating time. But when we arrived here, I had this Tom Hanks moment, and I rented a houseboat on Lake Union. And I thought it was nifty, but it was right across from Gas Lake Park. But Sheila found the houseboat claustrophobic. And then we moved out. We thought, you know, all our kids now are out in Seattle. And I was saying to Sheila, what started this whole movement was that I said, you know, after age 70, being bi-coastal is no longer sexy. And so we moved out, and all that time, she really didn't have a chance to do gardening or anything like that. So this was her time to flourish. I still pretty much stay on the porch. I don't go further than the perimeters of my home.
So Brian and his lovely wife, Sheila, moved to the island in 2007 after he retired from Time magazine in New York. After a few years on the island, Brian became restless, and hearkening back to his news hound days, he decided to record a half-hour news and information weekly radio show on KVSHLP, Vashon, Voice of Vashon. It wasn't long before the show morphed into a full hour-long show broadcast live every Tuesday morning on KVSHLP's new Gene Bosch broadcast studio in downtown Vashon. Brian began inviting guests, and these guests soon became a regular panel. One of these original panelists described it like this: "We were at our best because we were modeling what Brian wanted us to be doing." She described the radio show conversations with Brian as one that weren't trying to persuade so much as listen and understand. It was easy to express our opinion in a place where we all knew that we liked each other no matter what, she said. "I think that it's an important thing to try to rebuild. Not a lecture hall or a rally, but a thoughtful place of people talking." Brian died in January of 2020 at the age of 84. We are attempting to keep his legacy alive by carrying on with this current panel. Current panel includes Bruce Hallman, who is with us here in the studio this morning. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning.
In addition, Kevin Jones, who's joining us from his boat up in Nanaimo, Canada. At least we hope he's there. Are you there, Kevin?
Pleased to be with you, Truman. Hope I'm coming through loud and clear.
You are indeed. Sounds great. Thanks. Also in the studio here is my co-pilot and pal, Craig Bellis. Good morning, Craig.
Hi, Truman. I am sitting right next to you, as per usual.
And our newest member, our fairy maven, Amy Dreher. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
And I am Truman O'Brien. I'm sitting behind the big board here. As a way to introduce ourselves to our listening audience, this August panel is made up of some kind of interesting characters, I think. And I've sent out a questionnaire to each of them and asked them to fill it out and give us a full bio of their background. So, Bruce, let's start with you.
Well, it's after listening to Brian and Brian's career, it's sort of like we all feel like, wow, we're in the shadow of giants. But
exactly.
And then as you hear all the other bios, you'll realize how lucky I feel being a part of this group. But Truman sent us this list of things that started with, interestingly enough, where were you born?
Exactly.
Well, the swaddling baby Bruce came out second after his twin brother Clyde.
All right.
By about 15 minutes. But in Riverdale, Maryland, which is a little town sort of between Hyattsville and College Park, Maryland, just outside of D.C. So as a little kid, I grew up in Washington, D.C., basically. And then 10 years old, we moved to Panama City, Florida, which is on the Gulf Coast, and it's sort of moving from a big northern urban area into a town of about 40,000 people in the whole county on the beach in northwest Florida. And it was interesting because right now Panama City is represented by Matt Gaetz in the U.S. Congress.
Wow.
So if you can imagine in the 1950s moving from Washington, D.C., which was certainly a segregated city but changing very rapidly, into the deep, deep, deep South, it was an interesting sort of experience. And of course, finished grammar school and middle school and high school, went to Bay County High School, go Tornadoes, all that good sort of stuff. And in high school did sort of the normal stuff, played football, wrestled, track, those kind of things. Not much of a wrestler, not much of a track person, but the football coaches wanted us to do that to stay in shape the rest of the year. But I also was in band, and that's where I really found my love of music and was involved in the marching band and the concert band and the jazz band. And playing in the jazz band, they needed a bass player. I originally started playing saxophone, and so they wanted a bass player. So I said, I can do that. So I picked up an upright bass. They had one at the school, and that's when I started playing music as a bass player, which is one of those interesting kind of transitional sort of positions in any band. You're part of the rhythm section, so you're back with the drummers and you're keeping the beat, but you're also playing the bass of the melody. So yeah. You're sort of providing the chords, the bass of the chords. And so it's a really interesting position to be in. You're sort of responsible for keeping the beat along with the drummer.
If I can interject, I'm surprised you did that, Bruce. You do not have resting bass player face. You typically have a big grin on your face, which is inappropriate for anybody.
Oh, no,
to play.
No. That's right. That's right. Bass players, good bass players, always smile.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
All you have to do is go watch Bruce Ferris.
Exactly. I must be thinking electric bass.
Well, yeah, those are different animals
than
upright bass.
That's right.
But then Truman also asked, well, where did we go to college and what were our majors and those kind of things? So I was one of those sort of privileged, peripatetic academics who just never wanted to leave school. Mm-hmm. So I went to university at Stetson University, a small private liberal arts college, kind of like PLU, UPS, that sort of high school. There were like 1,200, 1,400 students, so no place to hide, basically. Yeah. I mean, my largest class in the whole time I was there was probably 18 people.
Oh, wow.
And most of the classes, once you got into your junior, senior year, most of the classes were essentially seminars with 5 or 6 people. So literally no place to hide, which for me was good.
Yeah.
But I started as a music major. I had a full ride music scholarship, so which meant I played in the band and the orchestra. I played in every opera and every musical production. I played in the Christmas chorales. I mean, all of that stuff. I mean, it was like a full time job going to school, but it basically paid for me getting through school. And then once I graduated there, I love school. And so I went and got my master's degree at Florida State University in international relations. And then got a full ride fellowship at University of Texas to study American studies, do American studies. And so I went to the University of Texas and was there and essentially worked as a TA. When I went to the University of Texas in 1967, there were about 18,000 students. When I left in 1971, there were 45,000 students. So that school just exploded. And that's when the wave of the baby boom came into universities and colleges. So I was at University of Texas. I did not finish my PhD there. I went on and worked. I taught in St. Louis. I taught at the University of Oklahoma. And then we moved out to the Seattle area. And I taught for a year at Green River College. And then I had a major career shift. If you sort of think about your career in retrospect, mine goes through several stages, you know, sort of academics up until my early 30s. And then I went out of academics into public service. I was the budget administrator for Metro in Seattle, the bus company in Seattle, for almost 8 years. Started working for King County and Chuck Collins in John Spellman's office when John Spellman was county executive. And then Chuck got appointed director of transit, so I went over with him and was budget administrator, which was an interesting kind of experience because when a dean job opened up at Green River, I had both the academic experience as a teacher and also had this sort of administrative and budget experience. So I got that job as a dean. And I was a dean for almost 10 years.
Wow.
And I loved it in one way. But in another way, what you were always doing is helping other people realize their dreams. It's the curse of the administrator, if you will. And so when the opportunity came up, I went back into teaching. And I taught for almost 30 years at Green River in American Studies, history. During that time, I went back to UW, finished my PhD in history, did a really fascinating to me anyway, dissertation on film history. And what I did is I sort of looked at the two film genres, the Western, the classic cowboy movie, and I contrasted it with what I call the education films. So Goodbye, Mr. Chips, Dead Poets Society, you know, Kindergarten Cop, all those kind of things that are all about education. And Westerns are always very masculine, very actions speak louder than words kind of stuff. And, you know, and it's all about sort of excluding people. You know, basically you kill the bad guys, you run the bad guys off. Education is a very feminist kind of genre, and it's all about inclusion. Language matters, feelings matter. And so it was an interesting sort of juxtaposition of two forms of film that come at the world in very, very different ways. And so I taught film history at Green River. And then I had the opportunity in the 90s to teach in London for a couple of years. So I three times in 93, 96, and again in 99, I taught study abroad programs in London. And during that time, started a program up in Clackwood Sound on the west coast of Vancouver Island, a summer program. And so I'd had that sort of study abroad experience, if you will. And then in 2000, summer of 2000, one of the vice presidents of the college and this guy from Australia walked in and said, "You've had all this teaching experience abroad, even though Canada's hardly abroad." But
it's abroad, yeah.
But it's abroad. And they said, "Do you want to start a program in Australia?" And I said, "Sign me up." And so from 2001 until just earlier this year, it was the last year I taught in Australia and New Zealand. We did a program first 5 years we did just Australia, and then it was sort of these one of these aha moments, and my wife Pam helped me sort of see that. She said, "Hey, we're in Australia, New Zealand, it's just right over there, why don't we go to New Zealand?" And so contacted Unitec University there and set up a program, so we were half the time in Australia, half the time in New Zealand, and then back home. And we managed to set it up so it was winter quarter here, January, February, March, which means it's the middle of summer down there. And so basically for 25 years, I had not experienced a Pacific Northwest winter.
You missed some dillies.
Yes.
No kidding.
Until COVID came along, and then that all changed.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, my sort of employment history. It was academics, public service, being a dean, back to academics, and now I like to call myself a public historian. I don't get paid for it, but I basically just love history, love writing about history and sort of learning about Vachon's unique history. So that's a sort of a quick overview of me and my career. Truman asked what special talents we bring to the Brown briefly, and I think one of them is I have a bottomless pit of historical BS to draw on. So whatever topic comes up, I can
speak to it.
Yeah, yeah, whether it's true or not. You know,
That's right.
And then the other thing is, and Amy will identify with this, I just come from a very deeply postmodernist sensibility in terms of understanding cultures and histories. And I know it's often considered woke, or it's often considered sort of just trendy sort of stuff, but postmodernism gives us a really unique way to understand who we are and why we're the way we are. Hmm. So that's my 10 minutes are up.
Wow, that's fantastic.
A quick overview.
I just have one quick question. Mm-hmm. When you were teaching film, did you ever see or talk about the Owl Creek incident at Owl Creek Bridge?
Yes, yeah. And I used that in my dissertation as well.
I wondered if you did.
Right.
That's a fascinating short film.
It is. It's one of those cowboy movies about about a person being excluded because of their point of view,
right.
and it's sort of that they ends up beginning to convince everybody.
All right. Cool.
I have just a quick comment. I have to say I'm amazed, Bruce. That is not only a spectacular resume, but you didn't even look at your notes. And there's three of us here that are not youngsters.
He's a teacher. Come on. He's a teacher.
That's right.
He's used to speaking extemporaneously.
I'm actually trying to give Joe Biden a run for his money.
Well, you're done. Good job.
That's right. All right, Kevin, how about you?
Hey, I'm happy to be learning all about these insights into the brieflease, you know, that we otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to hear about. So, Truman, thank you for arranging all of this.
Sure.
So let's see, I may or may not be the only one to hold down the slot as a Seattle native. I have been within probably 10 minutes driving distance of the Salish Sea my entire life and had opportunities to change that, but happy that I never have. So early on as a kid, got involved in skiing, started when I was age 12, and I had the unfortunate circumstance where my mother was selling condominiums up at Alpental, a ski area, had to be up there every single weekend.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, it was really torturous, but I essentially grew up as a teenager in a ski area every winter. Eventually, taught skiing for Alpental Ski School for a short while before college intervened. And by the time college and financing and the time it takes to study didn't really jive with skiing, so had to put that aside for the moment. But graduated from UW with a BS in electrical engineering, focusing on automated control system design. But Bruce, I started at Green River Community College, and I was probably there in 76, so our tenures may have overlapped.
I went to Green River in 81, so we just missed each other.
No. Okay, close call. So, hey, after graduating from UW and starting to work, I actually had some money, and I wanted to go. First thing I did as a purchase was to replace my old Peugeot U08 steel bike that I'd been riding back and forth from housing there north of the UW campus with an upgraded bike. So I went out to Greg's Green Lake and talked to a guy who said, racing or touring? And I said, yeah, racing sounds interesting. And so they put me on a bike, which was really pretty amazing. I still have it. I still ride it. But it convinced me that I should sign up as a United States Cycling Federation licensed bicycle racer, which I did for about a decade or more, including becoming a race director. We had to host a race once a year. And so basically I jumped on that opportunity to learn how to do that. The highlight was the Wheat Thins Mayor's Cup in Bellevue. And the thing that was amazing to the crowd was Eric Heiden, for example, showed up on the 7-Eleven team. We were all expecting that. What I didn't expect is Lenny Wilkins, who is a player coach for the Seattle Sounders, showed up in the audience. Seattle Sonics. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait a minute.
Yeah, which team was that? So, you know, that was interesting to rub shoulders with some highlights. But work, I should probably jump back into work because I started out at a place called the Advanced Space Systems of the Boeing Company. It's a great group to work with. It's with a terrible acronym, but they got over that and kept the name despite that. The last decade at work, I worked on new technology development, which is really fascinating because it brought together business development, customer relations, and engineering groups that usually don't talk to each other. And so I was in the middle of that, coordinating, you know, prototyping and demonstrations of new capabilities for our customers. Maybe one of the best things about work is a vice president who wanted me to relocate out of the Northwest. And I began to realize that I didn't want to do that because I really enjoyed the water and the mountains. And I realized I wasn't doing nearly enough to be in those mountains or on the water. But on boating, for example, I built sailboats to work my way through college. The Clark Boat Company built several San Juan boats. If you know about sailboats, they probably know about those. In inheritance from Susie, allowed us to buy Opus 5, in which we're sitting right now in Nanaimo. I learned a lot about boating and decided to share that with something called Tech Talks. And so Quartermaster Yacht Club considers me the Tech Talk wizard, and I actually have a hat to prove it. So, area of definitely of interest to me to this day. It also in terms of getting into the mountains, I got involved with scrambling, which is non-technical climbing, which means climbing on rope and rock, or climbing on rock and ice and snow without a rope. And so I kind of narrowly avoided being that guy who got stuck on a rock face solo in Royal Basin in the Olympics. And I'm sure somebody eventually would have found me. The good news, I was able to get through to the top without being clipped out. Climbers know it's easier to go up than down, so I could very well have been stuck there. And so I talked to a friend who did a lot of climbing, and we made a deal. I would help him build a trebuchet if he would help me learn how to stay alive in the woods for a year. And the good news is I'm still here, and I've done a lot of stuff out in the woods. And I eventually joined the Mountaineer Scramble Committee and taught the scramble course focused on avalanche safety. But, for example, my first backpacking trip, first ever backpacking trip was the Bailey Range, which is about 4 days off trail through the Olympics. I've been stuck under a lenticular cloud on Mount Adams. You've never had that opportunity. It's pretty exciting. We climbed Glacier Peak from the east on a route that I engineered. And we're literally 3 days out. The only other people we saw were at the summit. So quite an exciting time. After work, retired in 25, I got into activism, political activism, and in 2016, after making 1,000 calls to support the candidacy of Hillary Clinton, Robbie Mook got on the line and said, the votes are not coming into Arizona like we expected. And of course, in 2016, we launched into what is currently some political agony for many of us with the Trump years. But we fought back in 2017, the first time I ever knocked on the door to help elect a candidate. We were able to flip the Washington State Senate with the election of Manka Dhingra. Now we have 7-seat majority Democrats in the Senate and 14 in the House. And I'm happy to say that that's really enabled us to accomplish some amazing things. If you want to see who we're supporting this year in terms of candidates, go to our Indivisible Vashon website. Click the Get Out the Vote banner at the top of the page and check out what we do. Couple more things. In 2019, you elect the right people, you get good things done. The Clean Energy Transformation Act motivated dozens of Vashon Islanders to turn out to testify in support of that law. What it means is, as of this January, whenever you turn on your lights or whenever you fill up your electric vehicle, you are not turning on a coal plant. Puget Sound Energy will be coal-free electricity as of the 1st of January 2025. So that's what that success looks like. Other climate opportunities, Vashon, it turns out, looks like it's the number 4 highest density of solar across the whole country. So maybe we can get to number 1. And the last thing I should mention is I do chair the Equity Committee of the Vashon Murray Community Council. The goal there is for the council to build relationships in the community to assure we are all seen and heard in all of their decisions and recommendations. So hopefully that political activism work is going to lead to some future good things to come out. But thanks for the opportunity to share a little bit about what I focus on.
Quick question. You said that that Washington State is what number in solar? Like number 4 or something?
Vashon. So, it's sort of surprising. And Steve Bergman, who's done math on that, Steve is a certifiably really smart guy. We're getting data from Puget Sound Energy, thanks to them, how many solar installations we have.
Okay, I thought it was Washington. Sorry. But yeah, that makes sense.
Steve has compared that to other communities, and he says, a year ago, he said we were number 6. The last time we got data, he says we're now number 4.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive to think about it.
Very. Thank you very much, Kevin. Craig.
You bet.
Let's start a rumor. We're second in the country
here. Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was wanting to do.
I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the outline to follow here, Truman. This is one of my most unfavored topics to talk about myself.
Yeah, right.
He's over there laughing. Yeah, right. Everybody's smirking around the table here. What is going on?
Yeah, he's been in a plane with you. He knows that. Right.
Well, where was I born? I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Son of Czech and Croatian immigrants, packed my bags and moved to Portland at the age of 1, where my older brother and sister went to the Kennedy school, which is now McMiniman's down there in Portland. Then moved at the age of two to San Mateo, California. After third grade, moved from California to Northern Ohio. Quite a culture change there as well. Where did I go to high school? Well, I went to high school in the little town of Elyria, Ohio. Elyria District Catholic High, one of the few Catholic schools that isn't named after a saint. I was lucky enough, I was a big boy. I played first-string varsity football in my sophomore year, weighed in at about 220 at the time. And I threw the shot and the discus in track and field. Second 2 years, we moved back to California, to Mountain View, California, and went to an all-boys school, St. Francis High School in Mountain View. And that's where I kind of learned to sing. I became president of the Glee Club at the time. College, I started out at UC Santa Barbara, which was very difficult, with 8 miles of beach surrounding the university. Back in the days when tuition was free, it was basically free.
Wow.
The University of California, I think my tuition was less than $100 a semester. People say you can't go to school. You can't have free college. Well, they did at the University of California until Ronald Reagan became governor. Mm-hmm. And then after the first year, I transferred to Santa Cruz, where I was a banana slug for 3 years and graduated with a BA in psychology. That school I flunked out. That's a pass-fail school, and it's very difficult to flunk out. when you get a letter in your mailbox on campus, and I was living down on the beach south of the boardwalk in Santa Cruz at the time and rarely went to school, I didn't check my mail for probably 4 or 5 months, so I never did get notice that I had failed out. And by mistake, they let me re-register. For the following quarter, when I finally did check my mail, I went to my counselor, my advisor, and I said, I think I flunked out. And he goes, let me look into it. And he goes, you're doing pretty good this quarter, so we decided to let you stay. So sometimes procrastination pays off. I used to go to summer school at University of Santa Clara as well, where I took many history courses. I was a history emphasis there. I loved those courses. Then I went to law school at Gonzaga, where I got my Juris Doctor. And after I graduated from law school, I decided with that law degree, I wanted to do absolutely everything I could do with that law degree, all different sorts of things. And I knew I wasn't going to make $1 zillion if I kept changing up my jobs, but I just wanted to experience all I could. And then I got another degree several years later from the University of California, Berkeley, a Master of Laws degree in international practice. How did I earn my money while I was in college? I was an auto detailer, a tow truck driver, a body shop and auto mechanic apprentice, an apartment manager. I worked for Washington Legal Services. I was a law clerk to two private law firms and a legal intern for the Washington State Court of Appeals.
Wow.
All trying to scrabble together the money necessary to get my Jesuit education at Gonzaga. My first job out of college, I was a judicial law clerk in Tacoma for the Court of Appeals. Loved that job, wonderful judges, one of whom, Justice Pearson, was my landlord. He later became a Washington State Supreme Court justice, but he had a place over on Horsehead Bay, and he let me live there for almost 2 years because I kept keeping the water and the septic system alive and built a new bedroom on to his cabin, as a matter of fact. Employment history during high school. I was an Amway salesman. I worked in a boiler room selling hair salon certificates. I was a creamery worker, a furniture delivery person, orthopedic children and high fashion shoe salesman, and a Pinkerton security guard at San Francisco International Airport. After law school, I was an assistant attorney general for Washington State in the Antitrust Consumer Protection and Education Divisions, and for a while represented the Green River Community College. Cool. I became a professor of law in 1979 at the age of 30. where I taught torts, products liability, criminal constitutional law, and forensic evidence. I don't think I've ever mentioned that was a fun course to teach. During that time, I was also an administrative law judge for the Washington State Higher Education Personnel Board. Then I went to work for a private firm in Seattle, both doing civil and criminal litigation. And in 1990, I started my own firm, the Bellis Group, or as we sometimes refer to it as the Bizarro Group, because we had some really bizarre clients and cases. Now, I'm an international arbitrator and mediator. I've been doing that, actually, since 1987. I've been teaching law as an adjunct professor at Seattle University. I was the chair of the bar examiners for many years, chair of the dispute resolution section of the state bar. In 2010, I had a slow day at work and decided I'd apply for a Fulbright scholarship. And got awarded a Fulbright and taught in Prague and in Brno in the Czech Republic, teaching international dispute resolution. And then again, I got another Fulbright specialist, where I went to the Isle of Mauritius in the Indian Ocean, just a gorgeous place, trying to help develop a culture of dispute resolution outside of litigation. And I had a great fun, wonderful people there. And to this day, I'm a Fulbright peer reviewer. So if you're looking for a Fulbright, your application will probably come across my desk. Don't pay me any money. I won't take it. Although I guess under one of the recent cases, you can pay me afterwards, but you can't pay me before.
That's right. Only if you get the...
That's right.
I'm not going to pay you if I don't get it.
Right? I know. That's the way that works. What special talents do I bring to the Brown Briefly? I have a broad legal experience in education, public and private, civil and criminal practice. I'm a 37-year resident, not 37-year-old, but I'm a 37-year resident of Vashon Island. I was the chair of the King County Vashon Governance Options Committee back in 91 to 93, where we looked at the various ways we might be able to have more power over our governance. In 93 to 96, I was on the first Vashon Land Trust Board as a board member. I was the president of the Community Council from about 94 to 98, president of the Vashon Allied Arts, now Vashon Center for the Arts, from 98 to 2003. I was the first male on the original Dove Project board from 2012 to 2015. And I was a board member and vice president of Northwest Folklife from 98 to 05. And I'm currently on the Voice of Vashon board with Truman here sitting beside me. Mm-hmm. The other thing, what special talents do I bring? I have 6 years of training in samurai swordsmanship.
Oh, well, that's we need that nearly every week.
I know. I thought that might come
You've
in
been
handy.
Sitting on this the whole time, I and have, here I've we never are, mentioned just it. Muddling right. through.
I know. We need to be careful, guys.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
The last question you asked are, what are the challenges that the Brieflys face going forward? And one, I thought, and I apologize for lopping some of us together, but the attrition. There's three of us that aren't getting any younger. Everybody else is getting younger, but we're not getting any younger. And the other one I thought was the continuing effort of defining our brand, not trying to be everything to everybody, or not going the opposite direction and narrowly limiting ourselves to certain kinds of activities. But we do meet from time to time and talk about our, quote, brand, and how to further it and retain it. So those were a couple of things.
You know, one of the things that that I mentioned earlier that one of our earlier board panel members said was that this is not a lecture hall or a rally, but a thoughtful place of people talking. And I think that really means something. And I think us talking makes other people think, which I think is really an appropriate thing to do. And maintaining our relevance is, I think, really important. But I agree with you. Thank you. Amy, you're up.
Yeah, well, great. I have been sitting here thinking and reflecting much as Bruce had about living on Vashon and the company that I get to keep, and definitely feeling like I have spent my life being lucky enough to be entertaining to people who are far more interesting than I am, right? So get to keep great company, but also remembering I went to Scripps College, Women's College, and graduated in 99, and a friend of mine, valedictorian Mitra, was giving her talk, and her talk was basically, you know, look around you. You may have spent your college career being so inspired and not overwhelmed, but just sort of in awe of the women that you are going to school with, that you may not take the time to think about how amazing you are. Yeah. It really was sort of a, you know, not just a, it wasn't just a call to you to find what was amazing about you, but accepting the fact that you are part of this amazing community of people who are all inspirational to each other. And I feel like that is very much the Vashon experience. And I feel that here, and definitely being part of the Brieflys. I know I've got a few years left to get my resume up to spec here. I am... sort of, I say originally from Vashon. We moved up here from Newport Beach when I was four, so in 1982, and I am a proud pirate, class of 1995, you know, green and gold, and I think they're still green and gold. I see a lot of black creeping in there because it's cool, but green and gold, and I, too, was in the marching band. I was also in the Seattle All-City Marching Band for a couple summers. I played the trumpet, which, listening to Bruce, made me think of the Emily Salyer's quote, I never was cool, right? Saxophone, upright bass. There I am, marching along with my trumpet. No one who knows me is surprised that I play the trumpet, which I will be honored by. But yes, I was a pirate. I went back to California, kind of back and forth a little bit. Still had family in Southern California, went to Scripps. And I don't know that I can match Craig for moving. I think I might be able to, but ours as a youth was around the island. We started in Paradise Valley, then we went to Sunrise Ridge, down to Burton, then down to Tahlequah, back up to Burton, down to Tahlequah again. So, packed my bags many times and experienced many parts of the island before heading down to California and really having a fantastic experience down there. Crazy homesick for the first year. Thought about coming back to UPS because I missed the water so much. But made it through. And what did I do during the summers in college? Well, again, sort of in a retrospective mode, I'm thinking that I've maybe spent 3 years of my life, my professional life, not in politics. Mm. Sort of politics or community organizing or community work. And I thought I'd made a great escape in 2013, only to be sort of dragged back onto the field in 2016. But we'll get to that later. And so summers in college, between my first year and my sophomore year, I was a field organizer in Sacramento for the Stop Prop 209 campaign, which was, an early Republican attempt to roll back affirmative action in California, and organized in Sacramento and out in the communities up there in Northern California, and got some really great field organizing training, was able to work with the Huerta family and the Chavez family. And, we were not doing workers' rights at that time. But, you know, of course, if you're in Northern California and you're not training in that sort of tradition, you're doing it wrong, I think. So really, really good work that I was able to do there, and so much to learn. And then fun story. I spent a little bit of time in D.C., but early on in my college career, I flew out to D.C., was accepted to this union training, AFL-CIO union training week in D.C., and, my friends are in Southern California, and there's this big march in San Francisco, big march for women's rights that weekend, and this is, 1996, I think, 1995, so I'm like, cool, I will just fly to SFO from D.C. after this union training, and I'll just meet you at the march. We have no cell phones. We have no way of knowing. There are hundreds of thousands of people in San Francisco, right? So I've got my bag, got my wheelie roller bag, and I get off the plane and I have the cab driver. I'm like, just drop me off kind of where the march ends a little bit. Like I kind of knew the route, So I was like, just drop me off and I'll just kind of watch them go by. So, you know, these gals had driven up from Scripps and I did. I set my roller bag down and I sat on my roller bag and I just watched people marching, thousands of people marching by. And at some point I saw, it was my friend's like blue hair. And I was like, hey, you guys, it's me. And I like ran out into the march and away we went. That was astounding. I don't know if that's organizing or luck or what that was, but then after that, I spent a summer organizing back up in Sacramento, working for the National Organization for Women, and we were doing the Safe Workplaces, Safe Campuses campaign. And that was the kind of back in the time, we were the first people to sort of say, hey, y'all, sexual harassment is real. It's true, right? We're now 97, 98. This is, you know, decades before Me Too, decades before anything was, you know, considered important, right? That a hostile work environment, you know, we sort of started, it's the legal time when hostile work environment is starting to be legitimized. So, I was doing a lot of youth organizing and Safe Campus work around that summer. And then the next summer, I had the awesome experience. My friend and I jumped in my Ford Explorer and we were hired as interns for the National Organization for Women. And we drove to every Lilith Fair across the country that year.
Wow.
So we went to, you know, 28 Lilith Fairs and how many different 30 some, 40 some states. And because, you know, we were on the organization dime and doing it on the cheap, we stayed in what is known as activist housing. So again, this is like no cell phones. We only had a pager, right? And we're out in the field, you know, we're out in fields at these concerts and stuff. We're trying to like page each other of where we're going to stay tonight and everything. And, that was very exciting because basically what would happen is at the end of the day, we would pack up our truck, you know, pack up our booth. We would work the booth all day long at the Lilith Fair. So I got to see Emmylou Harris like 25 times and I got to see Bonnie Raitt like 15 times. Right. And, you know, I'm also 20 years old and, you know, none of this is sinking in at all. I still thought it was cool. But anyway, at the end of the night, you know, it's usually like 10 o'clock. We roll up on some total stranger's house and we're like, hey, we're going to stay here tonight. They've been given notice, but we got very comfortable just staying with strangers. And as I'm sure you can imagine, we experienced many things during those stays. Many surprises, many things that grew to not be surprises about activist housing, but met amazing women across the country that really, you know, sort of at a meta level informed my understanding of trauma and, you know, the kind of, and I'll get big headed here, but, you know, the trauma that patriarchy inflicts on people, whether that's gender based, socioeconomic based, right? But the kind of women who, you know, work for Now or volunteered with Now did so often because they had experienced trauma, lifelong traumas, right? And so, you know, really kind of getting into the grassroots and spending that much time with people, I think, sort of set the gel for my following trajectory. Then went to my first job out of college was Starbucks, I think, which is true. I think it outpaces McDonald's now for the number of Americans who have a first job or a job at Starbucks. In West Hollywood, California, which is a great place to work at Starbucks, got to meet a lot of celebrities, as it were, if you consider people who act celebrities. And then flew out to D.C. My friend hooked me up with this job to organize Gloria Steinem's West Coast campus tour for 2000, stumping for Al Gore. She was surrogate for Al Gore. So I did that, arranged, you know, campus stops for schools all up and down the West Coast. Got to travel with her and surrogates. And again, really just, you know, knee deep and waist deep, ankle deep, neck deep in activism, right? And just really getting on the ground and hearing what people are experiencing and, you know, kind of the work of politics before I went to DC and kind of got into the beltway of politics, right? Where you're sort of just armchair quarterbacking. It is, y'all, it is shocking what they let 25-year-old people do in Washington, D.C. It is shocking, like, what my friends and I were allowed to do and, like, the level of voice and influence we had in, you know, sort of the basic legislative process. And that was fascinating. You know, other than Vashon, I don't know anywhere that you'll meet more interesting people, a more interesting potpourri of people than Washington, D.C. You know, we would get together for happy hour and, you know, friends who worked at, you know, the Department of State and friends who worked in the legislature and friends who worked in nonprofits and friends who worked in the unions and friends who worked at the Smithsonian, right? Just sort of this amazing group of people you never wanted for an interesting conversation. And I then was able it. The friends of friends, my network is really, again, to be interesting to interesting people, I think is a great blessing. And so was connected and got to work on Eleanor Holmes Norton campaign. And again, did not understand what I was doing and who I was working for. And, you know, she is just liquid rocket fuel for sure. But did some stuff, parked 1,000 buses at RFK Stadium for the March on Washington, which was at the time unprecedented. In speaking with the security staff there, they were like, wait, what are y'all doing? What are you going to do? And, you know, here's me, 25-year-old me, being like, yeah, we're going to park 1,000 buses here. They're going to be coming from the north, the west, and the south. And here's the plan, right? And so we hooked up this team. Like, I created these teams of bus greeters, right, that we would just deploy throughout the parking lot. And, you know, they would, like, board the buses and orient the people where they had to go and then, like, lightning fast leave the buses and get on the next bus. And it worked. It, like, really, truly. Wow. Worked. And I do remember shouting into the radio at one point, this is what we trained for. so that was fantastic. And then moved to DC and slowed down the pace a little bit, worked at Denver Pride Fest and really deployed a lot of organizing experience there and production experience there at the GLPT Community Center. I was there for 8 years and we had enormous success with Denver Pride Fest and the LGBT movement, and really saw some changes that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. While we were doing work at the LGBT movement. I think then the next best highlight, 2016, it's maybe one of my proudest moments when I think about it. Like, what am I going to be more proud of as I look back? And 2016, I left it all on the field for Hillary Clinton, you know, kind of understanding where we were in our history. And, of course, did fundraising and knocked on a bazillion doors, but I also became, went to the DNC as a national delegate and was able to cast my vote as a national delegate for Hillary Clinton, and also became an elector. So I was part of the Electoral College [S2] Wow. [S1] Of the United States of America, which have mixed feelings about it, but, you know, to be able to sign my name, you know, as an elector for Hillary Clinton is maybe one of the proudest moments that I've had. You know, sort of, and to get that done and to get to that position was truly amazing. And then found myself back here. I tuned in, turned on, dropped out, became a writer, man, grew out my hair, literally, you know, just wrote some stuff and it was cool and found myself and found my creative side. And then here we are.
I'll tell you, this group is mind-boggling, to say the least, for me. I mean, I am totally impressed. I've learned so much about you guys. I only have a couple of minutes here, so I'm going to do mine fairly quickly. But thank you, Amy.
Yeah, no.
Fantastic.
I just have to add, Amy, your work with Hillary Clinton permits you to say, I told you so.
Oh, it does. And I've got some real specifics, man. Yeah. I got some specifics for some specific constituencies. But I know that I left it all on the field. I did everything I could for our democracy.
Wow. Well, I'll get started with mine. Believe it or not, I was born in Carlsbad, New Mexico. How about that? My father and his father owned a ranch there, and after about only 6 months or so, we moved back to Texas, where the family is originally from. And my father had a ranch there, but due to a 7-year drought, he decided that he was going to turn this ranch into a farm. And he put in a cotton farm, which everybody said, you know, you can't do that here. But he drilled a deep water well, and by golly, he put in a cotton field. And a dairy, and oh my gosh, the whole thing. The main thing that's important about that for me, I think, is that I grew up with a farm kid mentality, and I lived on the farm. When I started to a grade school, it was in Wickett, Texas, which is 3 miles away from the farm, and I went to Wickett Elementary, but it is now known as the Helen Gensler Elementary, and the reason is because my first grade teacher was Helen Gensler. And we were just crazy about her, of course. Over Christmas vacation, she went in and had surgery and died. on the table in surgery. And so when we came back to school, we learned that our beloved teacher had died, and it was quite traumatic for a bunch of first graders, I can assure you. But now the school is named Helen Gensler after her. She was quite popular. With that mentality, of course, the cycle of life, you know, birth and death, you really get an understanding of that as a farm kid. I learned to drive at about 8. My father gave me a Ford N tractor to drive and said, you can't drive in nothing but higher than third gear. Of course, I drove it in fourth one time, scared myself to death. But anyway, at age 11, my father got pretty tired of farming, and we moved to Montana, and where my dad took over the operation of my grandfather's ranch outside of Miles City in Montana. I graduated from Custer County High School. And, of course, during high school, I wrestled like you did and played football and all of those things. But I also was in band, Bruce. I played saxophone as well. So we have a lot in common there.
Cool cats.
Here we are, marching band, jazz band.
Hey, we need the Brown Briefly band. Craig's a singer.
Oh, this is going to be bad. I can tell. I can feel it coming. But anyway, that was great fun. And I went to school. Eastern Montana College in Billings, and like you, Kevin, I majored in skiing and drinking wine and partying, and like you, Craig, I flunked out. So, and unfortunately, this was before the lottery for the military, and I said, you know, I'm going to get drafted, and boy, I do not want to get drafted. So I enlisted instead for 3 years instead of 2. But I thought, by doing this, I'm going to get into this little intelligence section, and I'll avoid going to Vietnam. And I figured, boy, I got this wired, right? Wrong. Got my orders out of intelligence school out of Baltimore and right to Vietnam, of course. So I spent a year in Vietnam, which was an interesting time. And then afterwards, I filled out my dream sheet and said I'd like to go to Germany, and got it. So then I spent 18 months in Germany, which was really fascinating. Working with the NATO group there, it was a very fascinating work. I will never regret that. I bought a car and traveled all over Europe also during that time. Got out of the Army, came back, went to the University of Montana, came out with my Bachelor of Arts degree in psychology and anthropology. And I have to always tell this story that I took a course in Introduction to Computers because my one brother was a computer analyst. And I took another course in anthropology because my other brother was an archaeologist and hated computers, but loved anthropology. So I came out with a double major. My first job out of college was at the Coordinating Center for Prevention of Alcohol and Drug Abuse at Fort Lewis, Washington. I was a statistician for them. My worst subject in school was statistics, but they hired me as a statistician. Shortly after that, though, an opening came up for the director of their counseling center for high school kids, and I jumped at that, and I was the director of the counseling center for, I think, about 3 years. Fascinating, fascinating work. I think it was Reagan that cut the funding for the military at that time. And, of course, what did they do? They cut the social programs first. So we lost our funding. And, by the way, while I was going there, I went to Whitworth College in Spokane, working on my master's degree. And I had the degree finished. I finished all the coursework, finished the thesis, and was all I had to do was to defend it. And we lost our funding, closed the center, and I was burnt out. And I said, that's it. I'm not going further. So I have a master's education without a piece of paper. Darn it. That's the way it happens, I guess. I will say that also for you, Kevin, while I was at the Eastern Montana College, that skiing is one of the main things that got me out of there. So I was a big ski nut, too. First job out of college, I said that. Okay, so brief history. After we closed the center at Fort Lewis, I came to Vashon. I took on the job as a superintendent of Camp Sealth. And I thought, you know, I'd be working with kids and whatever. Well, mainly it was running the camp. I mean, the physical running of the camp, which was pretty interesting. After 3 years of that, I decided, oh, by the way, I started flying when I was 16. I soloed at 16. Never had an intention of making a living at it, but it sure was fun. But I decided to get a job flying. And My wife said, you're 32 years old, you'll never get a job flying, but luckily I did. Make a long story short, I worked for flying a DC-4 up on the beach out of Alaska, hauling fish, and later got hired by San Juan Airlines, then Horizon Airlines, and eventually ended up at Alaska. My last 12 years as a captain in 737. Fascinating, fascinating job, to say the least. And in terms of what talents do I bring here, a couple of things. The little hometown that I was from in Texas was Monahans, Texas. It was near Monahans. Washington Post, I believe, had this survey where they looked at the most liberal and the most conservative places in the country. Monahans was number 3 on the conservative list. So what I bring is a slightly more conservative viewpoint to the brief lease, but also I have family and friends who are very much conservative. And so I'm able to share with this group what their views are, which are quite obviously not prevalent today. But anyway, I'm looking at a clock, and we are already running out of time, and we didn't even get to what today is or anything. But this was fascinating, folks. I really appreciate all of your efforts. This is going to be a very good introduction to our podcast. So you folks who are listening via podcasts, you can look forward to more interesting conversation, I hope, going forward from now on. So for all of us, real quick, Amy, what do you have for us next week?
Yeah, so I think we've decided that we're going to get back to our roots a little bit. There is too much to discuss in politics, current events, and the world that we have not discussed.
All right.
So we are going to chew on some heavy jerky next week.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. And for all of us here at the Brown Briefly, we look forward to seeing you again next week, and please tune into the podcast as a regular. See you all next week.